Hello, my name's Mike Talty and I work at Microsoft in the UK. And this is one of a number of videos around a technology called PRISM, sometimes known as the Composite Application Guidance. This comes from the Microsoft Patterns and Practices team and largely targets building Silverlight and WPF applications. But you can use some of the techniques and the pieces delivered outside of those spaces. So you kind of get two things with PRISM. You get some documentation and you get some libraries in the form of source code that you can build up for WPF or Silverlight. And as I say, you don't have to use these inside of those kinds of applications, but some of the technologies in PRISM are specific for UI work with these two technologies. PRISM has a friend called Unity, which is another framework, and we'll talk about that as well in these videos. And in terms of finding these things, if you want to find PRISM and so on, if you just pop to a search engine, type in PRISM and CodePlex and you'll find PRISM. If you want to find Unity, type in Unity and CodePlex and you'll find Unity. If you want to find these videos, you can go to channel9mstn.com/niners/mtalty. That's me, and I'll put these videos on this site here. If you want to find me, you can go to mtalty.com. That's my blog, and you'll find it there. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/mtalty, and you can find me on there as well. And if you want to find me on email, I'm just mtalty@microsoft.com. Right, so in video 6 here, I want to take what we did in video 5. So in video 5, we built a Silverlight app. Let's say app in quotes, so it doesn't really do anything. And we composed that out of two real modules and one fake module, which was there just to help the video progress. And those modules came along and registered services that the other modules could then pick up and use. And we talked at the end of that video about how it would be great if there was some way, some prescribed framework via which these modules could not just register non-visual services, but sort of register UI components and get them composed into some kind of container. And PRISM has a notion of this already. So what it has is it has the idea, you don't have to go with this particular part of it, but it has the idea that there's a shell. And the shell is kind of your main UI container, if you like. So we'll just call that the main UI container. And the shell is subdivided down into a bunch of regions. And your modules can come along and register what are known as views into those regions. So you just have a shell made up of a bunch of regions, and then dynamically and in a loosely coupled way, modules can come along and say, hey, I'd like to put a view onto the screen, please, and slot it into a region without having to know too much about where that region is or what it might be, and so on and so forth. So let's take what we had at the end of the last video and let's move towards shells, regions and views and just see the very, very crux of that and before we move on towards what is almost certain to be video 7. So let's just close this down. Okay, so let's go back into Visual Studio. Full screen that thing. Let me just open the project we're working on. This guy here. Okay, and let's take a look at the solution just for a second. If you remember how this was going, we had some pretty simple functionality. We have our application. Our application, we'd hijacked the startup event in our application class here in order to create our bootstrapper and tell it to run. That's a Unity bootstrapper that we derived. Let's just go to the definition of that class. That class is a Unity bootstrapper. It came along and loaded a module catalog, an idea we're getting familiar with, and it did not create a shell because we talked about missing that out for the meantime. That module catalog came along and said, hey, we have three modules, one of which was a bit of a hack. That was the main module, which I used just to be able to ensure that I knew when the application had loaded all its modules. The main module said it depended on module B. Module B said it depended on module A. These are all from separate zaps. I'm sure you're aware if you came from the previous video. And what we did, I think, in our main module was after we had initialized things, we grabbed a UI service. This was my hack, and made it our root visual. Down into our modules, then module B came along and actually has a UI service. That depended on a text service that we got by a dependency injection. And the UI service, when you ask it for UI, just created a text block. And And the text service, just following that all the way through, was in module A, and it just returns a string hello world. Let's start to move this towards more how Prism intended us to work. So let's close this stuff down. And the first idea, let's pop our Solution Explorer out for a second. If we go back to our main project, what I'm going to do first off is get rid of this main module, because it was a bit of a nasty hack that I just introduced to make the previous video work. And let's go to this module catalog and make sure we take the main module out of there as well. Boom. And by the way, just as speaking about modularity, notice what I just did. I deleted a module, took it out of the catalog. That's it. The app doesn't know about that anymore, which is quite neat. That's a side point, really. And what we want to do then is create this idea of a shell, the main UI for the application. So we can wander up to this application. Let's add a new item into this particular application. And let's go ahead and say it's a user control. And this is going to be our shell. So just say shell.xaml. Just a user control. Nothing magic about it. Let's take off the hard-coded width and height, because that's always a nightmare no matter what you're building. And let's add a reference, because this shell is going to be made up of a number of regions. And the region functionality is in an assembly, which I don't think I've got reference right now. So let's go out and add a reference. I put all my Prism assemblies into C temp assemblies, if you remember. And I'm going to bring in this one here, composite.presentation. So we kind of avoided that so far, but that's coming in at this point here. Now we've got a reference to that thing. Okay, so what we can do is mark out our shell here as being a set of regions. We've already got a grid. So let's go and take that grid and add a couple of, I don't know, columns to it, something like that. Let's say column definitions. And let's put a column on the left and a column on the right. Didn't mean for that first one to be quite like that, so let's do that. Okay, so we have two columns. And then what we're going to do is just mark out regions of the screen. So let's say in the column on the left, let's have, for instance, an items control. So he's going to go into the column on the left. And on the column on the right, let's have a content control, i.e. something that can display anything. We'll put him into grid column equals 1. Okay, so those are just there on the screen in those two particular places. Now, I want to mark these things as Prism regions where these views that we're talking about can actually be slotted in. So there's an attached property that I need to use for that, which lives in that assembly that I just brought in. So I'm going to bring in a namespace into my XAML for that. So let's call this regions. And let's help get IntelliSense to sort this out for us. Now, it's always tricky when you're doing this at 1024 with big fonts because you can't actually read what's on the screen. But we're looking for presentation.re regions is probably right. And let's just format that so it looks okay. So regions is just being mapped to that CLARM namespace regions in that assembly you just saw me add a reference to. Okay, so that's all that is. So what we're going to say is this items control here is a regions region manager dot region. We'll give it a name. Let's call it the list region. Okay, that's the list region. This region we'll give a name as well. Let's just take this one and say regions colon region manager dot region name main region. So we've now defined two regions on our UI. Okay. That we can slot something into. We're not specifying what that something is at this point, but we've defined them. Okay, so let's just go and patch up our code for this. So let's go over to our bootstrapper. And the bootstrapper has been longing to create a shell for quite a while, and we've never let it create one. So let's finally let the bootstrapper create a shell. Let's say shell, shell, equals new shell. Let's say application.current.rootVisual. Is going to be the shell, and let's return the shell. Okay, so that's what that override has been wanting to do for a long time. We need to do this in Silverlight because we need a root visual, and that's going to be, in our case, the shell composed of these regions. Okay, so we've got that in place. How do we then get views into these particular regions? Well, let's just go and make things very, very simple for ourselves, as we're prone to do. Let's go over to our modules and add some views into these particular modules. And I don't think I need this UI service thing anymore. So I'm probably going to get rid of that. Let's get rid of that UI service. That's gone. I can't remember if we register that somewhere. I'm sure we do. So let's just make sure that this module no longer registers that type. That's gone. And I'm sure we had an interface for that as well, so let's just go and find our interfaces, and we no longer have a UI service. I can't even remember whether we used that one, so let's just tidy that up as well. We've got a text service still. I'll leave that alone for the minute. Let's close a few windows. Okay, so let's go to Module A, and let's imagine that Module A wants to add a couple of views, a couple of UI pieces into the UI. So let's just go to this, let's add new item, user control, let's say, we'll call this Module A View 1, something like that. Module A View 1, that doesn't seem too bad. That's a user control. And we'll not give it a specific width and height. For the minute, we'll just put a piece of UI in there. It says text block, text equals Module A View 1, something like that. Okay, so that's our text block with that view in it. Very, very simple. Save that. Let's go to that project again and add another item. Let's take a user control. Let's call this Module A View 2. And let's get rid of this. And in here, let's go and put another text block that says Module A View 2. Okay. And then finally, let's go over to Module B and add into that thing a new view. There it is. Module B View 1. And in there, not surprisingly, let's just throw a text block. Module B View 1. Okay, maybe we'll make them more exciting. Let's make this one yellow. Let's make this one green. Let's make this one orange. Right, they're a lot more exciting now, so that's great. And let's then think about how these get into those regions that we've defined on the screen, because the shell has a bunch of regions, but the shell knows nothing about these views. And at the moment, the views know nothing about the shell, and that's the way we want to keep it. So it's all a bit strange as to how that's going to work. Well, what happens is, one of the services that's already present for you and configured by the bootstrapper, in fact, the Unity bootstrapper that we're using, or at least deriving from, is a thing called a region manager. That's already built into the Prism framework, and it's already there for you to use. So when you're looking at your module registration, like we are down here, at the moment, at initialization time, we just register this one service. But we could also make use of this region manager to register the fact that we have views that are interested in being inserted, or maybe injected, if you like, into a particular region on the screen. So what we could do is we get hold of that region manager. Now, we could ask the container for it, or we could just have it dependency injected for us. So let's say we want an I region manager. Call that region manager. And we want to store it so we can get back to it. So let's just have... Oops, I don't like that casing. Sorry. There we go. Region manager. Let's say this.regionManager equals region manager. That's great. And then at initialization time, I guess we could factor that off into some function. Let's just refactor that into a method called registerServices. Oops, and then delete it. Let's not do the deleting. And we could factor the other one into some method that we might call registerViews, something like that. Let's just go and get that generated for us. And in registerViews, what we want to do is talk to that region manager. I'll just move this up so it kind of logically flows. In register views, what we want to do is say region manager dot, and you can see that there's a bunch of things we can do here. We can register a view with a region, which is what we're going to do. We can add to a region, but let's go and register view with a region. And it says, okay, what's the region name? So this was module A, so I'm going to put these two modules into, now did we call it list region? One of the joys of loosely coupled things is that they tend to turn into strings at the end of the day. So let's just go and check list region. Yeah, we did. So list region. And there's a couple of different ways we can do this. We can provide the type of the view. Okay, so if we've actually got the view type here, we can use that. Or we can write a delegate that will provide the actual view. So there's two ways of doing that. One abstracts you from having to know the type of the view in this piece of code here, because this delegate just returns an object. What we'll do for the minute is we'll return the type of the view. Let's say type of, now what do we call it? Module A View 1. Okay? And let's go do the same thing for View 2 from Module A. Okay, so that's great. We've registered those two in the list region. So the only thing this module knows about the UI and where it ends up is that there's a region called list region. That's it. It doesn't know anything else. That's all it knows. And then if we go to our Module B module, here he is. Again, I suppose we could write a function, register views, something like that. And again, we probably need to get hold of that region manager. And we need to keep that around. Remember that this is a service that's already been configured for us by Prism. And so that's where it comes from. It's just injected for us here with the region manager. And so what we'll do is we'll initialize. This has no sort of services beyond its views. And it only has one view. So we'll say region manager register view with region. The region is called main region. I remember that one. And we have type of module B view 1. Okay, so let's see what we've done. I think we're probably at the point where this stuff should actually sort of run and work. Let's press F5 on this. And at the very simplest level, what we're hoping to do is get our two modules to inject their three views. I've got first chance exceptions on in my debugger. Don't worry too much about that. Okay. And so you can see it's the strangest UI that's ever been created, but it's not really how it looks that matters too much right now. What we've got is Module A adding View 1 and Module A added View 2 into the list region on the left-hand side, because we've got a grid that's doing 50-50 proportional split. And then on the right-hand side, we've got Module B, who has added in View 1 into a content control over on the right-hand side. So these modules have come along and they have injected, if you like, views into these regions, and all they knew in order to be able to do that was the name of the region. They didn't really know anything else. They just knew this, and the shell only knew that it had some regions list, and in this case main. And you can see how we injected two views into this region and one view into that region, and we made that stuff work. Okay, so at the moment our views are not really connected to anything, and we have a sort of service that we might be able to use. So let's close a few things down. And let's go back to our Module A project for a minute, and let me just put some folders in here to make things a little bit more clear. So let's add a new folder in here. I'll call that one Module Definition, something like that. And I'll just drop that module in there so we can see that. And then we've got some views, so let's add a new folder in here. We'll call this one Views. And we've got that in there. Let's drag that in there. And then let's go and add one more folder. I call that Services. And we'll drag our text service into there. And I suppose this should structure module B in a similar way as well. So let's just go and add a folder into there. Let's call this one Views. This guy can go into there. And let's go and add another folder. Let's recall module definition. Not sure if I can type that and drag that into that. Okay, so we just shaped that around a little bit just so it's better organized. Okay, so where we are at the moment is that we have some views that are entirely defined in XAML, and they will be because they don't do anything. So all we've got is a user control with a grid and a text block that the text is hard-coded in. Now, clearly I could give this particular file to a designer, and there's no real way they could break anything that I've done in that file because there's no code in there. There's absolutely nothing going on. And ideally, we'd like to keep it that way. However, what I want to do is put my text from my one and only very simple service, which is represented by the iText service. I really want to put that into this view. So what I would usually do is go behind here and write some code that then loaded up that service and called it to get the text. But that's not really quite so clever, because it means that I've then taken this XAML file and this view And I've built a code dependency between it and the view, which means that it can't really be used very easily without the code anymore. So we don't really want to do that. And then on the other side, over here in the service that I've got, this guy over here has this method called getText. And again, from that view, there's not really any easy way of calling that method getText. And really, this just is an gross oversimplification of the idea that you may well have services, and you want to build them to be completely independent of anything to do with the UI. So it's perfectly reasonable for this service to have a method like getText. However, the UI actually needs a property called text that it can data bind to, probably with property change notification on it in order to do the data binding. So we've kind of got a service, and we've kind of got a view, and we want them to talk to each other whilst remaining loosely coupled, and yet we don't seem to be able to really bridge that gap. And whilst it's not mandated by Prism at all, most, if not all, Prism applications use a pattern that's becoming increasingly sort of prevalent for business applications, which is known as the model view model pattern, or MVVM. And in some ways, you can kind of think of my text service here as being my model, so we know kind of what that is. And you can think of my views being the views. You've already got those. And the idea is that we kind of bridge those problems that we were just talking about with an additional class called a view model. And so what you do is, in between your model and your view, you put another class called a view model. So actually it becomes not kind of MVVM at all, really. It becomes MVMV or VMVM, but that's not so catchy, so people call it MVVM. And the idea of this view model is it surfaces the bits of the model that make sense to the particular view, and it surfaces them in a way that makes sense for Silverlight's data binding capabilities, or WPF's data binding capabilities, if you were working in WPF. So that's kind of the idea, that you have your model, you have your view, and you have this bridge class in between that, well, yes, bridges that gap that we were just talking about. Now, the trick about this is that the view, what you want really in your view is for it to be just XAML, entirely declarative, that just does some data binding and some other things that we'll talk about as the videos go on. What you want in your model, again, is to be independent of UI. So it means that this view model becomes a transformation layer between the two. But what you also want to be able to do, because you're going to build code into this view model thing here, is you want to be able to test it. So you don't want to take a sort of hard dependency between this view model and the model that sits beneath it. And the tricks and techniques that we've been sort of playing with dependency injection allow us to sort of work that way. So let's scrub these comments. And let's take our incredibly simple example a step further. So really what I want in my text block here on module A view 1 is I want some text that is just data bound. So let's just say binding to text. That's what I want. I don't want anything else. So that's great. That's entirely declarative. It can go off to a designer. There's no code behind it. It's just fine. So that's gone. Okay, great. Let's close a few windows down. So let's add a new folder in here. And again, it's very, very simple. Let's add a new folder. We'll call it view models. And what I want is a view model to support module A view 1. So I'll add a new class in here. So I'll call this module A view 1 view model. So that's not really a very nice name, but we'll do it anyway. Module A view 1 view model. Okay, great. Now this thing is going to depend upon the text service. So I'm going to throw a constructor on here that just takes that iText service. Call that text service. And then we'll just keep one of those down here. And we'll populate it up. Okay, so we've got that available to us. And on this view model, we want a property of type string, which will be text. I could probably make this one read-only, but let's pretend it's not. We need a getter and a setter on that thing. What we want to do in the getter, we'll assume we do have a text service, so we'll just say return textService.getText. IntelliSense has now got upset with me, and we'll just have a setter that doesn't do anything, and hopefully IntelliSense will come back because we fixed the bracing problem. So we're just returning, delegating down to that text service to return the text, but in a way that is friendly for data binding. And arguably, if my text was not read-only here, I would implement I notify property changed and implement that here as well. But for the minute, let's just do that. So we've now got our view model that supports that particular view that we wanted. Module A, view 1. That's our first view, and this is the view model that supports that thing off the service that we've got. And bear in mind that this thing is still independently testable because this text service is just being injected in. So you don't have to use the real text service. You can use a testing or text service in order to test the class in isolation. And there's no need to instantiate the view to test this class either, because it doesn't know anything about the view, so that's quite a nice thing to have. So we then get into a sort of thorny issue, really, which is around, should the view instantiate the view model, or should the view model instantiate the view? And there's different views out there. Sorry to reuse that word views over and over again. There's different perspectives out there about how this should work. At the moment, what's happening is our shell, through its region manager, is instantiating our view. And that's being done with dependency injection. And so the view is instantiated. And right now, nothing would instantiate this view model here. So if we just go back to our code that registers things with the region manager, if we go back to our module, you'll remember that here we register the type of this view. So this allows the framework to instantiate one of these, and it does it with dependency injection, but right now it doesn't have any dependencies. If we take a look at the view, where's the view gone? Here it is. Doesn't have any dependencies, so it just gets instantiated, basically. And that means that we would not get a view model. So, you know, what do we do about that? Well, one view would be that we can have this thing either register a dependency on the view model, and then it would instantiate it. Another one would be that we could go to the XAML for this, and we could put a resource in here which was the view model, and then we could set that as a data context, and that would mean that the view, as it was created, is creating the view model. That's one way to work. They both kind of involve the same thing, really. The view creates the view model, and people call that view first. If we went back to the view model, what we could do, as we kind of hinted at earlier on, I think, when we looked at our module definition, there is another overload of this. So we could do region manager dot register view with region, providing a delegate, that second parameter there, which ultimately created the view. We could put that delegate as a function on the view model. So we could have something on this view model here, some kind of function. I'll just fudge it for a minute. Public, let's say object, make view, or let's say, yeah, that'll do. Let's say make view. And this would return a new, what's the thing called? Module A view 1. Now, I'm not so keen on that, because that means that this view model seems like it's intrinsically linked to this view, which I don't know that makes perfect sense to me. I think the answer is that there's no perfect answer around should the view create the view model or the view model create the view. I'm certainly still kind of divided as how this is supposed to work. And I've seen other ways of doing it, which where people write explicit code so that neither one creates the other, but you write another piece of code that links the two together. Anyway, let's for the minute assume that we're going to allow the view to create the view model. And the way that I'll do that is by going to my view, or at least the code for my view, and kind of flagging that I have a dependency on the module A view 1 view model. Let's call that model. Now you may be looking at that and thinking, hang on, shouldn't I have used some kind of interface here? But there's not really an interface that this model is going to surface to the view. The only thing that the view is going to know about the view model is that it's going to use it as a source for data binding. So there's not really an interface to extract at this point. So what we'll do is we will just take that parameter there, which will get dependency injected for us, and we'll just say that as this component loads, let's just run a little piece of functionality, and as the component is loaded, what we'll do is just say this.dataContext equals the model. So that's all we really have as a sort of form of coupling between these two things. All we're saying is that this depends on one of those and uses it as a data context, and that's kind of it. Okay, so that's that for the minute. Let's go and write a separate view model for our other view. So I think we had another view in here called view 2, not very imaginatively. Let's go and visit that. And this would also want to bind, so let's say binding text. And we could use the same view model here, but I won't, just to reflect the fact that quite commonly what we'd want is more than one view of the same data. That's pretty common in applications. You know, you might have details view in one place and a highlight view in another place. And so what we'll do is we'll write another view model. Let's add another view model. So let's just go ahead and throw in a class. This will be called module A view to view model. Okay, so it's another view model. This thing is also dependent upon the text service, so let's get that injected in. Let's just store it in a member again. And for the simplicity of this, let's just have another property on here. So say public string text get. And on that string text, let's go ahead and... Or actually, let's just make this different. Let's make this an integer. And let's say return textService.getText.length. So we're returning a slightly different view in as much as we can around a string. So we have a slightly different view in that different view model here. And then we need to go and revisit our view 2, look at the code for this, and do a similar job to what we did before, saying this now has a dependency on module A, view 2, view model. We just fix that casing mistake. And this is going to be our model. And we can say this.loaded plus equals some handler that says this.dataContext equals that model. Okay, so we've indicated a dependency there on this view model. Let's go and do a similar thing in our other project. And we go down to our other project. Let's add a folder here for view models. Let's go to our view again in here. This is in module B. And let's go and just change this so that it's also bound. Okay. And let's go and jump to the code for the view model. Let's add in a new one of those. So this is going to be module B, view 1, view model. And again, this has a dependency on iTextService. We want to store that off. And let's add a property on here again. And for argument's sake, let's just return textService.getText. Let's go and split this up based on a space character and take the first element of that. That should be okay. So we take the word hello, I think, is what we end up with from that. So once again, I'm not sure if we have done the binding on that thing. And then if we jump to the code behind, this view now depends on module B, view 1, view model. Let's call that model. Let's say this.loaded plus equals this.dataContext equals model. Okay, so we kind of built our three views around three view models that are all pointing ultimately at the same lump of data, or at least the same service that provides them with data. Let's see if we can press F5 on this, see where we've got to. I've probably broken something somewhere. Let's see how we get on. So we'll run this thing back up in the browser. Okay, so you can see that our text service is now being sort of surfaced in three different ways by these three different views. We've got the first word, hello, we've got hello world, and we've got the length 11 over there. And you probably just in a very, very, very simplistic way see now how these modules are coming together and contributing views into the shell and regions within the shell. And then within those views, we kind of implemented them a certain way in that we have a entirely declarative view, just a lump of XAML with declarative stuff, bound to a supporting view model, which underneath is using something like my service in this case to actually go and do something. Nothing particularly realistic in this particular case. Now, as we go forward, there's more services in Prism that try to help around the idea that you are composing these user interfaces from separate services. We've not fully explored all that regions can do for us yet. We'll come back and look at those a little bit more. And there's also services in Prism that try and help with this idea of having views that are entirely declaratively driven. Because the immediate problem we'll get to is as soon as we want to put some user interface onto this view that actually does something, the question becomes, well, where does the code go for that? Because the natural solution is to put code behind here, and then our view is no longer entirely declarative, and you've got a whole bunch of functionality living in the view, which you perhaps can't easily test. So we'll explore those things as we go forward, but I'll snip this here to keep the video relatively short. Where we've got to at the moment is we've got modules contributing views into regions. Those modules and their views are kind of implemented, at least to some extent, with this pattern of model view model. And we're composing those things together into regions in a shell. And so we've moved along from the previous video, and when we get to the next video, we'll move along again.